The next case is Neonode v. Samsung in 2023-2304. And this is the first of three on the 879 patent dealing with different claim limitations. This is 1B on indefiniteness. So, Mr. Graves, when you're ready for this case.
Thank you, Rob. One moment, please. Thank you, Your Honors. Philip Graves for Neonode Smartphone LLC. This court should reverse the district court's judgment of indefiniteness with respect to Claim 1 of the 879 patent because the district court committed three errors of law, all flowing from the failure to apply the Nautilus and Philips standards. First, the court failed to apply the Nautilus and Philips frameworks to Samsung's argument that the claim limitation 1B at issue is subject to three equally competing interpretations. Instead, the court took an erroneous shortcut, failing to review the prosecution file or consider the prosecution file.
I want to ask you questions, but I know you want to get three things out, so you want to run through those three things more quickly so we can move on here?
Certainly, Your Honor. Yes, so the first error of law was failing to apply the analytical frameworks of Nautilus and Philips to Samsung's three meanings argument. The second error of law was focusing on the issue of whether the specification contains the word option to the exclusion of the prosecution file and reviewing the claim limitation at issue within the context of the claim. And the third error of law was basing its conclusion in part on its determination that Neonode had failed to prove an argument that Neonode never made. This again reflects a failure to apply the proper analytical framework under Nautilus and Philips.
Okay. Let me start off with just a housekeeping question, which is, if we were to affirm in this case, does that get rid of the two IPRs that follow here this morning?
It could render them, I wouldn't say, no, I actually don't think it would. So if you were to affirm in this case, that would render the patent unenforceable. So I think effectively it could.
Well, it would render it invalid.
The
subsequent cases would be moot.
Correct, yes. Invalid and unenforceable against any other party.
Don't answer plain meaning, please. What is your view of what the meaning of this claim term, the construction of this claim term?
Well, Your Honor, so we've provided that in our briefing, and it's the same meaning or explanation of plain meaning that we provided below, and it tracks the language of the limitation fairly closely because we don't believe that there are any terms here that require any technical exegesis. So, wherein the representation consists of only one option for activating one of the one or more functions. That's what we proposed for our claim construction.
That's
below.
The language of the claim.
With a slight gloss, one or more functions at any given time. Apologies, I left that off at the end.
So read it to me again. Your construction of wherein the representation consists of only one option for activating the function.
For activating one of the one or more functions, calling back to the indefinite article A, a representation of a function in the preceding limitation at any given time.
Where do we get the any given time?
Yeah, that comes from the specification, Your Honor. One of the curious things here is that the court focused its analysis solely on the specification without reviewing the prosecution file, and yet missed the fact, which we pointed out, that there are actually examples, three examples, of exactly what's recited in limitation 1B, a representation that consists of only one option for activating the function.
Does it say at any given time?
And one of them, and this is representation of the general application dependent function 21. So if the court will turn to appendix 85, figure 1.
Yeah, but where's the narrative in the specification?
And the narrative in the specification is at appendix 90, column 4, lines 1 to 33.
Okay, and that's the predetermined function is what
you're... Correct. Three different predetermined functions. One of them is a general application-dependent function. So in two of these functions, and that's function 21, okay, there are three functions, 21, 22, 23. 21 is a general application-dependent function. 22 is a keyboard function. 23 is a task and file manager, okay? And the representations for activating those functions are shown in figure 1 at the lower portion of the display. Now, the at any given time comes from general application-dependent function 21.
So can I ask, I'm sorry, we have to keep moving on.
Of course.
So I'm sorry to interrupt. But Samsung proposed three alternatives, which the district court got onto. What's wrong with their first proposal? Seems like that's quite close to yours, but you seem to have rejected that.
Right. So their first proposal, I believe, is that the representation represents a single function, and only one specific gesture will activate that function.
Yeah.
Well, that's not consistent with the claim language, first of all. The claim language in limitation 1A recites a representation of a function. This connotes one or more representations of one or more functions. In limitation 1B, wherein the representation consists of only one option for activating the function, calls back to limitation 1A, one or more functions. So under the claim language, limitation 1B does not limit the claim to the representation representing only a single function.
I guess they said their first proposed meaning is that the representation represents a single function, and there is only a single option to activate that function. Only one specific input gesture will activate that function. Except for not having the words at any given time, I understood this to be what you're advocating. No?
No, Your Honor, it is not. There is not, in the claim language, there's not a one-to-one mapping of function to representation. There are two examples of that in the specification. Functions 22 and 23. Function 21, though, the general application-dependent function, does not map to just a single function. So general application-dependent function 21, if you activate it, you will get a series of icons providing the user with tap-activatable functions for settings and services of the application that is currently active when that function is activated. So as explained in the specification, if there's a camera application that's currently active and the user opens up that general application dependent function 21, you'll get icons for the camera application.
So this claim limitation was added to distinguish over Hirschberg, right?
That is absolutely correct, Your Honor.
We're not arguing that, as I might expect, that by looking at Hirschberg, we would know what this isn't, and therefore find some definiteness to this claim limitation, because it's not what Hirschberg describes.
That is exactly right, Your Honor. So this language was added to the claim in order to distinguish Hirschberg, which taught a series of what Hirschberg called multifunction keys, which were keys where you could activate different alphanumeric characters depending on your trace off of the key in one of the four cardinal directions. ABC1, DEF2, and so on. The examiner cited Hirschberg, and the applicant amended to add
but
limitation 1B.
I guess I don't understand. I agree with you. That's what the examiner accepted it. But how is it that if I'm correct, Hirschberg, they said Hirschberg did not disclose activating only one function using a touch and glide gesture, right? That was the distinction drawn. But in Hirschberg, doesn't disclosing activating multiple functions using touch and glide inherently disclose activating a single function using touch and glide? That's why I don't understand the distinction between Hirschberg. Hirschberg says you can do several things. And if you can do just one of those, isn't that inherent in Hirschberg?
No, I would say it's not, Your Honor, because Hirschberg offers the opportunity to activate multiple different functions or multiple different alphanumeric characters. And the claim was limited to enable it only the representation to only activate one. And that was actually not disclosed at any time in Hirschberg, but the multifunction keys, the user could always activate more than just one of those alphanumeric characters.
But if it can activate more than one, it can necessarily activate only one. Am I missing something? It was only, you're saying Hirschberg was only capable of activating multiple, but if you're capable of activating multiple, why doesn't that include multiple that you could do on individuals as well?
Because the keys were not, you're speaking to what the user could do, but the keys offered always, regardless of what the user decides to do with the key, the keys offered always the capability to activate more than one.
Hirschberg did That's also why. Disclose one key, 108, that had only a single function. How did you distinguish that key?
And that key was only activatable by touch.
Whereas your touch and glide, right?
Exactly. And what the examiner pointed to with Hirschberg was the multifunction keys, because those were the keys that were activatable by what the examiner appeared to believe was a touch and glide motion, which was already in the case.
Can I ask you, the language that really confuses me is options. I don't really understand what options is doing in your amendment, but I take it options came from Hirschfield to describe what you're talking about with Judge Prost, that you could pick four different letters depending on which way you strike the same key. And your contention appears to be all you did with this amendment is exclude what Hirschfield called a multi-option key, essentially. Is that all this is about from your perspective?
Yes. I mean, that's a large part of it, is that the scope of the claim the scope of the limitation is fairly discernible by looking at Hirschberg, and then discerning from that that's outside the scope of the claim. And in fact, at Hirschberg does use the word option, that is at paragraph 82 of Hirschberg, appendix 1259.
And is what you mean by option and what you propose to the district court that option means, does it mean what Hirschberg said? Is that what you're proposing?
I would say that would be fairly discernible, yes.
Where is it in Hirschberg? I couldn't find it in Hirschberg 1259.
Certainly, Your Honor. It's at appendix 1259, paragraph 82 of Hirschberg. And the quote is, and this is Hirschberg discussing an additional embodiment. Using the basic principle of having soft key selected by the initial contact point on any location on the key, then selecting one of several options based on the trace. So here Hirschberg is talking about, we can have this interface that I'm teaching in a virtual interface format as well, soft keys instantiated by software, right?
A lot of, in defense of the district court, and he doesn't need my defense, but, there was a lot of confusion in the record in terms of statements he made. And one of those in particular, and the other side outlines it in their briefs. But at the Google IPR hearing, you seemed to me to make inconsistent statements. At one point you stated, quote, we are not proposing that the representation of a function can only be activated by one gesture. And then at another point you stated, quote, the point is, at any given time, the user is given only one option in terms of what gesture to put in and what action to take. These statements seem irreconcilable to me. Why am I wrong?
Well, so two responses. First, I think it's easy to try to nitpick and find some little nugget in the record, particularly at an IPR hearing, and try to say this is inconsistent with everything else that's been said in the briefing and other statements that were made in the hearing.
Is that an acknowledgement that these statements were wrong or irreconcilable?
Excuse me?
Are you acknowledging?
No, Your Honor. That's an initial point, which is I don't think it rises to the level of proving indefiniteness by clear and convincing evidence to pluck one statement in an IPR hearing when the patent donor was very clear.
Candidly, I mean, I think this is a challenging case, and one of the challenges arises from statements made not just in the IPR, but at the Markman hearing and in your claim construction briefing that is kind of comparable to these that just make it very challenging to identify precisely what your position is. Is that unfair?
I of course would not say unfair.
You used nitpicking before, and I think it's a little more than nitpicking.
Well, when the patent owner was so clear in the hearing, right? There are statements that in the Google IPR hearing, there were statements, statement you pointed out and Appellee pointed out, but also the patent owner expressly said, we are not limiting the representation to only one function. That is not our argument. You know, we're not saying the representation is limited to one gesture. That is not our argument. Those statements were categorical and clear. And I think to the extent that there is any ambiguity in any of the other statements, that it is resolvable by looking at the categorical statements of the petitioner regarding their position, which also is consistent with the statements that were made by the patent owner, which is also consistent with the statements made by the patent owner in the briefing in the IPR.
That's just one other thing that happened in the district court that I'm struggling with. You did put in an expert report at claim construction, and you seem to think you cited to it extensively, but you actually told the district court it was a different exhibit that maybe doesn't even exist. And then the district court says there is no expert support for your construction. Are you contending that was an abuse of discretion on his part? And should we even be considering remanding for further fact-finding maybe on whether these claims are indefinite, or is this just a... Everyone agrees this turns on the intrinsic evidence, and we decide it one way or the other.
I think we agree that this turns on the intrinsic evidence with respect to this issue. On the gliding issue, there are issues of fact.
Okay.
Yes, but on this, it's the intrinsic evidence.
Did the district court make a material error in saying there is no expert testimony support for your construction on this, or is that just that's really not important here?
I think it's unimportant. With respect to the issue of the indefiniteness related to, or the alleged indefiniteness related to limitation 1B. Yes.
Counsel, your time has expired, but let's hear from the other side and we'll give you 2 minutes for rebuttal.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Mr. Panikowski.
Thank you and good morning again, Your Honors. This Court's decisions in Infinity Computer Products and Teva, which are both discussed in the red brief at pages 29 to 32, provide a clear blueprint to affirming the District Court's ruling of indefiniteness here. Your Honors, this is a case where the claim language and the specification provide no reasonable certainty under Nautilus as to the meaning of the claim term consists of only one option for activating the function. Turning then to the prosecution history, Your Honor focused on the applicant's remarks in response to the Hirschberg rejection at appendix pages 623 to 626. And Your Honors, that discussion itself is unclear as to what it is that the applicant was saying is the only one option for activating the function of which the representation consists. There are statements at pages 623 to 626 of the appendix that seem to point toward gesture. Maybe there are statements that...
Show us one of them.
Yes. So, Your Honor, if you look at appendix page 625, in discussing the support for the claims in the original specification, the last full paragraph there on page 625 of the appendix, when the applicant says that it notes that each representation, 21 to 23, shown in figure 1 of the original specification, consists of only one option for activating its corresponding function, the fact that you're talking about only one option for activating the corresponding function of the representation indicates that the option is not the function itself, because the function is already fixed as corresponding to the representation. That suggests that you're talking about the gesture. And then at the end of that...
I don't see that. It's distinguishing from Hirschberg, which would have had, instead of one option, it would have had A, B, C, D on each key, something to that effect. Isn't that all it's saying?
No, Your Honor, that is not all it's saying, because when the applicant is distinguishing Hirschberg on the prior page, appendix page 624, we're not sure whether the applicant is focused only on the single function key aspect of it, or focused on the fact that you only activate the function on that key with one gesture, a hard touch in Hirschberg, as opposed to the multifunction keys, where on the prior page...
Yeah, what leaves you unclear about that on the prior page?
And it is because of what the applicant is saying here, the applicant's language. So, Your Honors, what the applicant does is refer to two embodiments in Hirschberg, the single function key at paragraph 55, and then the single function mode at paragraph 74, where you elect a single function on contact, but there could be different motions. And then it says, in distinction, the claimed invention uses a multi-step touch and glide operation for representations that consist of only one option for activating the function. So in that sentence where the applicant is purportedly making the distinction, the applicant is talking about both the multi-step touch and glide operation, and then using this vague language, consists of only one option for activating a function. And we're simply not sure if the applicant is...
I guess, I'm unclear on what you're unsure about. It seems to me they're talking about key 108 from Hirschfield there, and they're saying, we recognize Hirschberg, has one embodiment with one single option key. It's called send in Hirschberg. And our distinction of that key is that instead of just a touch gesture, which is what Hirschberg uses to activate that send function, we need a multi-step gesture, at least a touch and glide. And that's how we're distinguishing around Hirschberg's key 108. Everything else we're talking about is we're not multi-option, because every other key on Hirschberg is multi-option, meaning you can do more than one thing by pressing that key or doing some gesture to that key. All of our keys, that is in the patent that's being challenged here, are single option keys. Why? I know that sounds complicated, but you understand what I'm saying. Why isn't that exactly what the patentee was saying? And clearly the examiner agreed with it.
So, Your Honor, that is not exactly what the patentee was saying. That is a reasonable gloss on the effort to distinguish Hirschberg. But the problem that we have here, Your Honors, is this Court has said that we need to focus on the claim language to determine what does this claim language mean. So when the applicant here introduces this language, consists of only one option for activating a function, and the language that is used there at page 624 is actually a little bit different than what actually ends up in the claims. But the problem we have here is that even if Your Honor can clearly distinguish Hirschberg from the claimed invention, we still don't know what this vague language, consists of only one option for activating the function, is referring to. And in addition to what I quoted from page 625, Your Honor, at the end of that paragraph, It also says, moreover, each of these one-option elements is activated by a multi-step touch and glide operation, pivoting again to the gesture. Your Honor, if you disagree with Samsung's position that these pages of the prosecution history discussing Hirschberg are unclear, and even if you were to find, contrary to Samsung's position, that if the prosecution ended here, we would know what this vague claim language means, Infinity Computer Products and Teva require this court to affirm the district court's ruling of indefiniteness, and that is because, as this court held in Alice v. Apple, the applicants and patentee statements in IPR proceedings are also relevant to claim construction. They can bind the patentee, they can inform claim construction to the same extent as the original prosecution.
Can you tell me where, and it could include in the IPRs, where did NeoNode say that the only one option is a gesture?
Yes, Your Honor. There are at least three places in the Google IPR proceedings. So the first two are at appendix page 745, the Google IPR hearing. And one of NeoNode's statements there is, and again, these are statements under this court's decision in Alice v. Apple that bind the patentee. Quote, the point is, at any given time...
What line are you on?
I'm sorry. So, Your Honor, at appendix page 745...
It looks like line 4.
Yes. And Your Honor, what NeoNode, the patentee, said here was, the point is, at any given time, the user is given only one option in terms of what gesture to put in and what action to take. Clearly, identifying the option as the gesture.
I think at best for you, ambiguous, but maybe.
And Your Honor, this
court, you have two other examples.
Yes, Your Honor. On that same page, appendix page 745, starting at line 8, NeoNode says, so you don't have to memorize 20 different gestures. It's a simple one-option activation. You swipe, the device activates what it activates. Again, referring to the gesture. And not only that, Your Honor, but at appendix page 709, in NeoNode's patent owner response in the Google IPR, NeoNode is attempting to distinguish Robertson. And what NeoNode said is, Robertson's different gestures provide the user with several options for activating the function. Thus, it fails to meet the one option limitation. This court held in Teva that even a single contradictory statement...
It's using options, like Hirschberg is using options, that in Robertson, it was those X keys or whatever, there's multiple things depending on which way you swipe. And it's saying, that's not us. There's only one thing, which, again, it's the word option isn't great, but it's just taken from Hirschberg. Whatever way you swipe or do your multi-step gesture in our patent, you're going to only always get one option at a particular time. Isn't that what it's saying?
No, Your Honor, that is not what it's saying. And I would like to address paragraph 82 in Hirschberg shortly, but to focus on this statement at appendix page 709 in NeoNode's patent owner response, Your Honor, there is no reasonable interpretation of that statement except that NeoNode is identifying the option as the gesture. What NeoNode says is Robertson's different gestures provide the user with several options for activating the function. Not saying anything about Robertson having different functions on the same key that you can activate based on the gesture. No. Robertson's different gestures provide the user with several options for activating the function. So NeoNode clearly said the gesture is the option, and if it weren't clear enough from that sentence, NeoNode punctuates it in the next sentence of appendix page 709, thus it fails to meet the one option limitation. So NeoNode is clearly arguing that you fail to meet the one option limitation if you use different gestures. That is different from the gloss that they're trying to put on the original prosecution history discussion of Hirschberg. And to turn to that, Your Honors, NeoNode has said that it got the word option from Hirschberg. And this is it. The word option does appear in Hirschberg, appendix page 1259, paragraph 82. However, in the original prosecution, at appendix pages 623 to 626, the applicant never pointed to paragraph 82 and never quoted or pointed to the use of the word option in Hirschberg. So that argument is entirely post hoc litigation driven, cannot cure indefiniteness.
Doesn't the specification itself give us three examples of the only one option for activating a function that is figure one and, you know, the key number or the icons, maybe numbers 21 to 23? Isn't that what Neonotes cited during the prosecution history? And isn't that what the specification is more support for what they meant by the only one option?
No, Your Honor, it's not. So looking at the specification itself, before we get to the prosecution history arguments, the word option is not used in the specification. The phrase consists of only one option for activating the function is not used in the specification. The only references to activating a function in the specification are in connection with gestures, in connection with figure two. So if you were to glean any type of hint or lean from the claim language in specification, you wouldn't ultimately be able to glean anything. But when you talk about consists of only one option for activating the function, you would naturally gravitate toward gesture, because it's a gesture that activates the function.
What about the language your friend pointed us to on column four, the beginning, where it talks about a predefined function?
Your Honor, that doesn't tell us anything. That's simply identifying the fact that in this exemplary embodiment, which the patent also describes as schematic and highly simplified, that 21, 22, and 23 are predefined functions. There's nothing in the patent, Your Honor, that connects any of that to the claim language.
Can I ask you?
Yes.
Okay, let me just get a little more general waving out. If the claim said, wherein the representation consists of only one option, For what function to activate at a given time, would that be clear in your view?
Your Honor, that would get closer. That would be a clue that would push us in the direction of option being correlated with the function. But of course, that's not what the claim language says. It says only one option for activating the function.
But do you disagree that in their brief, I'm not going to dispute that there were statements that are best confusing in the IPR, even in the Markman and the claim construction briefing. But it's also clear that your friend did make an argument that's kind of close to this at any given time, explaining it the way I just explained it, which you agreed would be sufficiently clear to withstand scrutiny under Markman, right?
Your Honor, we wouldn't agree that that would be sufficiently clear. That would be one clue that would point to function, but we would still have the fact that the specification doesn't give any clarity. We would still have an ambiguous prosecution history. And, Your Honor, we would still have these contradictory statements in the IPR proceedings, which under this Court's decisions in Infinity Computer Products and Teva would require a conclusion of indefiniteness here. And so, Your Honor, if the claim language were to be rewritten in that way, we would have a different type of analysis before us that may still lead to the same conclusion. But I think Your Honor's rewriting of the claim language underscores the problem that Neonode has here, where it chose this particular claim language. And this Court has instructed in interval licensing.
But you know what we do for a living, which is a heck of a lot of claim construction.
Yes, Your Honor.
And in every claim construction, there's always some ambiguity or some need to consult either extrinsic or intrinsic evidence to establish what the meaning is. So just ambiguity and some lack of clarity doesn't get us to the indefiniteness bucket. Correct?
Correct, Your Honor.
So aren't we there, given what I read you, which you conceded would have been probably clear enough, and it's not that different for another way, a better way of saying what the claim said, and is consistent with at least some of the remarks your friend has made through these proceedings?
Your Honor, there are three issues with that. First, that is not what the claim language says, And this court can only...
Yeah, we always do claim constructions that say something other than what the claim language says, unless we say plain and ordinary meaning.
Correct, Your Honor, but Your Honor's hypothetical posited that the claim language said something different and said that if the claim language said this, how would the analysis differ? What we have here is not, Your Honor, that that being a permissible construction of the claim language. We simply have different claim language. And Neonode itself, even today, cannot explain what it is that the only one option corresponds to. And so, Your Honors, we have a situation like in Infinity Computer Products, like in Teva, where the claim language is indeterminate. You can try on gesture, you can try on function in the actual claim language, and none of it really fits. How does a representation of a function consist of a function? How does it consist of a gesture?
I ask you one?
Yes, Your Honor.
It's not housekeeping, but it's kind of tech. This amendment was made 8 years into prosecution history. What was going on? What was taking 8 years?
Your Honor, there were numerous amendments to the claims during that time in response to a series of rejections, and I think that what...
Not to 1B, though. This was the only...
Correct, Your Honor. There were other types of claim limitations, including limitations that the court will hear about in the next two appeals that were being amended during that time. The gliding limitation, that is an alternative ground for affirmance that we argued in our brief, was also the subject of amendments. That was added 6 years into prosecution. And I think, Your Honor, what the prosecution history, which includes the subsequent IPR proceedings under ALIS, underscores is that Neonode was trying to use this application and this patent like a nose of wax to meet the demands of the day, to try to dodge rejections, to try to dodge invalidity, and then even still today is not able to offer an answer to what is the only one option. And that implicates the Supreme Court's concerns in Nautilus, this court's concerns in interval licensing, that the patentee should not be able to reap the advantages of the uncertainty that it has sown. It should not be able to impose disadvantages on others through the lack of reasonable certainty. We need to know what it is that is open to us and what is not by virtue of these claims. And this court...
Thank you, counsel. We appreciate the principles. And as you can see, your time has expired.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Graves, since... Mr. Panikowski went over, we'll give you your full 3 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor.
First, with respect to the statements that were made in the Google IPR, and further responding, Judge Prost, to your questions, if you go to Appendix 745, I believe it is, you'll see the principal statements that were made during the hearing that my colleague is pointing to. So it's important to understand that the statements that were being made at this point in the hearing, Neonode's counsel was explaining why the phone was being praised for its simplicity. And a large focus of that phrase, in fact, the primary focus, was on the swiping functionality where you could just swipe. You didn't have to memorize 20 different gestures or know where you're dragging and dropping something. So the focus there wasn't on the issue of, what does limitation 1B mean? The focus really was on the reasons that the phone was being praised for its simplicity, which was one of the secondary considerations at issue. Juxtapose that with the categorical statement made by Neonode's counsel, quote, "We are not proposing that the representation of a function can only be activated with one gesture," close quote. Categorical statement at Appendix 2051. All right. So there's no real ambiguity. As I said, you can pluck statements here and there to try to manufacture one, but ultimately, the statements made in the IPR are consistent with the claim construction arguments and position that was proposed.
Your friend says that even today you're not telling us what the only one option corresponds to. What's your response?
Okay. Well, I would say that if we're going to try to isolate the word option or only one option within the limitation as a whole, the only one option, would be the function among the universe of functions that are available to be activated by interacting with that representation. That's what I would say the only one option.
Give that to me again.
Yeah, it's the function among the universe of available functions available to be activated by interacting with the representation. So that, again, looks to...
Yeah, if you had to dumb it down, what does that look like on a phone, for
example?
You're
talking about the only one option. Where does the only one option come into that?
So this is the only one option. It's the one function among the universe of available possible functions that can be activated by interacting with that representation. And if you want an example, look at application dependent function 21 that's shown at appendix 85 and discussed at appendix 90 column 4 lines 1 to 33. That's where you could look for an example of that only one option.
Or the send key in Hirschberg.
Well, the send key in Hirschberg...
Which you distinguish because of a different gesture.
Right, that has
touch. But it meets what you're saying about only one option.
I would agree with that. That is correct, yes. As would the representations of functions 22 and 23 in the specification as well. Those two representations map to only a single function ever. Right? Just a keyboard function for 22, just a task and file manager for 23. So they're less versatile than general application dependent function 21 as outlined in the specification.
Thank you, counsel. The case is submitted.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Graves will move across the aisle.